From KUNC, this is Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Henry Zimmerman. It's Monday, August 12th. Thanks for joining us for the first episode of the new show.
Yeah. Colorado Edition will explore the big stories of the day with the aim of bringing context and putting important issues into perspective.
We're also going to follow developing stories in areas like education, the economy, science, housing, growth.
And we'll explore what makes Colorado such an amazing place to live with stories of arts and culture, music, literature, and the outdoors.
You can find the show Monday through Thursday in your podcast feeds, and beginning Monday, September 2nd, you can hear Colorado Edition on KUNC at 6:30 p.m.
Now, we're going to start the show today in Vail. The area in Eagle County is well known by locals and visitors mainly because of the ski resort. Vail is also dealing with an issue that is all too common along the Front Range, a shortage of housing, especially housing that would be considered affordable or attainable. A new development planned for a parcel of land in East Vail could partially help solve this, but if it moves forward, it would also impact the habitat of bighorn sheep in the town. The Planning and Environmental Commission is meeting this afternoon in the Vail Town Council chambers. We spoke with John LeConte, a reporter for the Vail Daily and a resident, about how we got to this point.
The area was commonly known to be open space. And after, in 2016, it was discovered that Vail Resorts owned the property, people started looking a little closer at it, I think mainly because not only did Vail Resorts owned the property, it was zoned for housing. So it was a fairly large parcel, mm-hmm. 23 acres, right in a sensitive bighorn sheep habitat that people went, oh no, you know, they can build here. So Vail, to their credit, a portion of the parcel as reserved that can't be developed. Oh. But they essentially divided the parcel into two parcels. One about 5 acres that can be developed, and the remaining 17 acres will not be developed, true open space. Now all we're talking about is 5.4 acres. That's the developable land. It's zoned for housing, but the Planning and Environmental Commission gets the final say on it. Okay. So they have certainly not approved it at this point, so they're kind of going through that process currently.
Now, this development would include 73 residential units. 12 would be regular housing, and then the rest of the units, 61, would be deed restricted. Would these units be open to anyone looking for housing in Vail?
The 12 unrestricted ones sure would be. The remainder would be, you would have to meet certain criteria. You know, a common criteria might be have to work at least 30 hours per week at a job in Eagle County, you know, that kind of proves that you're a local worker. Another one might be town residency prior to trying to purchase this one. They're just ways to kind of ensure that you're what we would call a true local, you know, a worker.
Okay. Not someone looking for a second home.
Exactly.
John, can you tell us how the construction would impact bighorn sheep?
Most people agree that it's not the construction itself that would impact them. It's what is the result of that? 73 units, a lot of people. There's been studies recently that have said nothing impacts wildlife more than residential. And in some of the studying of the area that the wildlife biologists did leading up to this, they even recorded a bighorn sheep grazing and a human approaching it and spooking it and you know, kind of ruining that grazing moment for that sheep. And so most people on all sides of the, whether it is don't build at all or build with mitigation, they both agree that it's the actual people that are living there that are going to cause the most damage to this herd, not the, you know, the few months of construction itself.
Okay. And so is all of this kind of done with an eye toward minimizing the impact on the habitat for the bighorns?
I think that that is probably, yes, the primary concern at the moment. The reason that I would say that seems to be the primary concern is not only is that the concern that residents are expressing, but a lot of the discussion has shifted to focus on mitigation plans. Let's assume this property gets built. How do we make it best for the sheep?
Okay, so it sounds like what they're planning to do is say, let us develop just this part of the parcel, and we will improve this habitat. We'll make it better for the bighorns over here.
Yeah, I've heard numbers of, you know, a dedicated fund of $50,000 per year set aside to those efforts, you know, or more.
Okay.
I think that the flip side to it is also in the report issued by the developer. They cited counts of the herd itself being 125 strong in the 90s and counted, it was down to 41 sheep. And so that herd is shrinking, and, you know, could this development be what finally moves them away or kills them?
John LeConte is a reporter for the Vail Daily. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
LeConte says a team of wildlife biologists hired by the town of Vail has suggestions for how to best mitigate the impact on the sheep, but their top recommendation is to find another location for the development. It's not clear if the Planning and Environmental Commission will make any decisions at today's meeting. We'll let you know in tomorrow's show about any updates.
Coming up on Colorado Edition, we'll hear about the role public libraries can play in curbing news deserts. But first, today's news. A building did not cause cancer in staff at Metropolitan State University of Denver. That's according to an independent health investigation, which found no hazardous materials in the West Classroom building. Four employees who worked in the same office building were diagnosed with three different types of cancer. MSU is holding a town hall meeting to inform the community of the completed investigation and to answer questions. The fall semester begins a week from today.
Due to an increasing number of high ozone days, the Environmental Protection Agency is reclassifying the air above the Northern Front Range. The EPA will classify the area as a serious violator of federal standards, down from moderate. That means the state will have to develop a plan to clean it up. John Putnam is with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment.
So we have rules in the works now to reduce emissions from the oil and gas sector, from the transportation sector, from paints, and we're going to continue those efforts until we come into ozone compliance.
The EPA will accept public comment on the Front Range's new rating starting this week and hold a formal hearing in Denver in September.
One of the planet's largest meteor showers is forecast to peak late tonight. The Perseid meteor shower is a favorite for stargazers in the Northern Hemisphere because it happens during warm summer nights. Breweries, parks, and libraries all along the Front Range are hosting star parties to mark the event. In Colorado, the shooting stars should occur most frequently in the northeastern sky. Unfortunately, the moon will be full, which could make it harder to see the fainter meteors. The best time for viewing will be early Tuesday morning between midnight and sunrise. And tune in tomorrow during Morning Edition for an early look at Tuesday's news.
Many parts of the Mountain West are turning into news deserts. More than 20 counties in our region have no local newspaper. Research suggests news deserts contribute to low voter turnout and increasing partisanship. So, what can be done? As KUNC's Ray Ellen Bichelle reports, some in the city of Longmont think they've got the solution.
Scott Converse could feel the desert closing in. It was 2017, and his local newspaper had just announced it was shuttering its offices and moving to Boulder.
All of Longmont's news left Longmont, effectively. And it, you know, honestly, it just PO'd me.
So he took action. He and another Longmont resident started their own publication, the Longmont Observer. From the get-go, though, funding was a problem.
We're proof that news is not profitable. We get enough donations to pay our rent and our internet here, and that's it. That's literally it.
So lately, Converse has been looking for new ideas for how to fund local journalism. That's when he came across something.
I found this article out of the Columbia Journalism Review.
It was called "Journalism is a Public Service. Why Don't We Fund It Like One?"
By a guy named Simon Galperin.
Yeah, yeah.
That's him right there. He works for a nonprofit called the Community Information Cooperative.
People feel it in a visceral way when they don't have the sort of information they need to get about their day.
Galperin says we need a way to publicly fund news. And he says the way to do this is through a common technique— starting something called a special improvement district. These already exist in communities across the country for a bunch of purposes. Parks, airports, highways.
fire safety, mosquito abatement. So it kind of just made sense to say, okay, let's create one for local news and information.
Technically, special districts are their own independent government units. They have their own funding, separate from the city budget, and their own governing board. Galperin says funding through a special district might allow a community to spread information in a bunch of different ways, including by hiring journalists, maybe even full newsrooms. Back in Longmont, that idea was a light bulb moment for Scott Converse.
And I thought, that's brilliant. What a great idea.
He learned that there's a type of special district that's actually really common in Colorado. They're for libraries. And what are libraries, he says, if not sources of trusted information, chock full of some of the nation's best information ninjas?
Librarians are badasses. You know, you do not mess with a librarian. If you try to remove a book from a library, you almost have to kill a librarian. It's not easy. So, and that's because they believe in the freedom of information.
Plus, libraries are nonprofit and nonpartisan.
What better place to put a newsroom?
Converse dreams of the library housing not just a staff of local journalists, but also the tools for citizen journalists to cover their community, like a makerspace for news. This is the Longmont Public Library on a Thursday morning.
Never shushed anyone in a library in my life. Don't plan to start.
And this is its badass-in-chief, Director Nancy Kerr.
You know, we really believe in people's rights to read anything and everything and support that.
And she says libraries are changing. If you haven't been to one in a while, take a look. You might be surprised. This library has an old card catalog full of seeds for people to plant in their gardens. Kerr says librarians help people with resumes and job applications all the time. And they just started a library of things where people can check out everything from ukuleles and telescopes to Wi-Fi hotspots.
We're always looking at new opportunities to connect people with information.
Broadly speaking, she says, libraries are already starting to share more characteristics with news organizations, like the libraries that have podcasting equipment and green screens available, or even the ones with plans to house the public TV channel in the same building.
Nothing is an impossibility for libraries.
The city is doing a feasibility study right now about how to make the Longmont Library its own special district, and a news service is part of that conversation. Scott Converse says he's getting some pushback on the idea of a government-funded news service, but he's got an answer for that.
It's not government-run news. It's news run by the people, for the people, and funded by the people.
Just like the BBC in the UK, or CBC in Canada, or at least in part, public radio, here. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Raelynn Bichelle.
KUNC is a member of the Mountain West News Bureau, a regional reporting collaboration. You can find more stories at KUNC.org.
And now let's look at tourism, an essential part of the state's economy. A new campaign is encouraging tourists to go off the beaten path, but is it working?
The Colorado Tourism Office has released data from 2018 that shows their campaign for sustainable tourism in the state is paying off. Here to tell us more about the campaign and the tourism numbers is Jason Blevins from the Colorado Sun. Jason, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
Let's start by talking about the Tourism Office's campaign. For people who are out of the loop on that, what was the campaign?
It was actually a sustainability approach, and they partnered with Leave No Trace Center for Ethics. And it was basically, you know, this, are you ready, Colorado ready, they called it. Are you Colorado? And it was a brochure that they had at Welcome Centers and some stuff online. And it was really just targeting travelers, not so much in the state, but it was in response to a listening tour where they had heard from residents in sort of touristy areas that they really wished that travelers and visitors had more sort of respect and appreciation for what they were getting. So basically it's the Leave No Trace ethics, which is, you know, stay on the trail, be careful with fire, pack out your trash, you know, don't bother wildlife. And basically, you know, the overarching concept there is to treat the landscape and the wildlife and the environment with respect. And they say that that is gaining traction. It's barely a year old, really. And the campaign is really seems to be finding footing there with visitors who tell the Colorado Tourism Office, yeah, we came to Colorado because of this sustainability approach. That is something that's very important to us, and it plays a factor in how we choose our vacation destinations.
Okay, so that's what tourists are saying. What else came out in the data?
So every year, the Tourism Office commissions a number of different sort of firms to reach out and give them a good picture of the type of people that are coming, the number of people who are coming, all the different approaches to these vacationers who are on their way to Colorado. And they found that these travelers spent a record amount in 2018, $22.3 billion. And that's a big increase over the previous year. And it's way more than the national average. And with that was one of the first times in at least 7-8 years that visitation numbers didn't increase in this, you know, grand scale. Visitation, overall visitation numbers were actually flat. So the tourism office is calling this a win. They had, again, back to that listening tour in 2016, they had heard from a lot of residents in tourist destinations saying, hey, we're pretty good. Like, we don't need more people here on Saturdays in July. We don't need you advertising come to Aspen in the summer. We're pretty good. Like, no need to just do this shotgun approach and trumpet Colorado to every corner of the country. So the tourism office heard that and said, let's refine our messaging a little bit. And while they still use that come to life campaign, they got a little more specific. So imagine, you know, sort of a tighter sort of focus on travelers who maybe would spend a little money. So when you see flat visitation and increased spending, the response from the tourism office is, hey, we're doing well. This is exactly what we wanted.
Jason, are there any other takeaways from the 2018 data?
One of the interesting things that I saw, at least, international travelers, the folks who are flying in from out of the country, they topped more than 1 million for the first time in 2018. And as you can imagine, they spend longer in the state and they spend a ton of money, more than $2,400 per person per trip, which is significantly more than you can imagine a Colorado resident or even someone from the U.S. coming to Colorado. So that's another sign that this tourism office campaign to kind of target the right people in the right place at the right time seems to be working, with at least it's reaching, you know, a broader scope of visitors. And certainly those international visitors are a prized visitor.
Jason Blevins is a reporter for the Colorado Sun. Jason, thanks for breaking it down.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Like the state, Rocky Mountain National Park saw an increase in visitors last year. Visitation in 2018 was up 42% from 2012 to over 4.5 million visitors. And in 2018, it was the third most visited national park in the country.
And while many tourists in the state come for the great outdoors, there are plenty of fascinating indoor attractions too, like the state capitol. Colorado's Capitol building has seen its share of political drama over the years. But beyond the filibusters, press conferences, and late-night debates, it's a building full of relics and hidden stories. KUNC's Scott Franz, who works in the basement, recently tagged along with a tour guide who was willing to share some of the building's biggest secrets.
To the untrained eye, the pink marble walls outside Governor Jared Polis's office look like, well, marble walls. But Ellen Stanton sees something else.
So you're familiar with the hat that George Washington and other patriots wore? It's called a tricorn hat, right? So does this look like a tricorn hat? And does this look like the profile of someone's face? You've got a nose and a mouth and a chin. So we've got our own little George Washington right here, right? And over here, we've got a turkey.
Just to be clear, the pioneers who flocked to Colorado during the gold rush didn't chisel George Washington's face or a turkey, but it's hard not to see the resemblance after you go on Stanton's tour. Now she's taking us up to the Senate floor to show off some real history.
Now these are the original desks. They were first used in 1895. So even before the building was finished, they were so eager to get in here, they used this room. And these are the original desks. They were meeting in warehouses and anywhere that they could find that was large enough. And they were tired of that moving around and anxious to be in this beautiful room.
Stanton and the other Capitol tour guides take more than 70,000 people through the building every year. And they have just 45 minutes to share its stories. Visitors learn about the nasty political fight between the man who donated the land and the state's first lawmakers. They also learn about the architecture.
The chandelier is original, weighs 1,700 pounds.
As the tour moves along, Stanton shows off the polished bronze railings that were shipped here from Ohio and the intricate wallpaper, which was recently restored to its original appearance.
I think the architect, Elijah E. Myers, wanted a wow factor, right? This celebrates democracy. You want people to come in and feel, this is an awesome room, and it speaks to me about our state.
And 130 years after it opened, visitors are still oohing and aahing when they enter the Capitol. But Stanton also shares the not-so-happy story of what happened to the man who dreamed up the building.
There had been a cost overrun, and his income was attached to the cost of the building. So as the cost of the building went up, so too did his compensation for being the chief architect. And they said, well, we already own the architect's drawings. I think we should fire him, and that's what happened.
There are also the more lighthearted moments, like the time someone stole the portrait of Abraham Lincoln in the 1990s.
And we never found it, and never found out who took it and why.
Ellen Stanton has spent much of her adult life taking people behind the scenes of some of the country's most sacred historic sites. Before coming to Colorado, she took visitors through George Washington's home in Mount Vernon and the U.S. Capitol building. She fell in love with history when her grandmother showed her a secret in Schenectady, New York.
There was an Indian massacre there in 1690. And even today, the older buildings there have unique features. For instance, in a hall where she lived was a very large piece of furniture. And when I was about 5 or 6, she said, come here, I want to show you this. And behind it was a door to a tunnel that led to the Mohawk River so that people could escape if there were a raid again. And that really piqued my interest in history.
Now, Stanton is opening new doors to show others the secrets of history in Colorado. With the turn of a key, she opens the large steel door leading up to the iconic dome of the Capitol. For many, this is the highlight of the tour. After climbing 61 steps, we've reached the top. We can see the snow-capped mountains to the west and Denver's sprawling skyline to the north. Brooklyn Chavez and her family are taking a group photo.
It's been really pretty learning about the building, and it's really cool, and all the history.
Is there a part that really stood out to you that you don't think you'll forget from the tour?
This view.
Yeah, the view is pretty amazing. I really like the architecture.
Back inside, Stanton says there's also a sort of state capitol fan club around the nation.
A lot of people are very interested in visiting as many state capitals as they can, and they'll very happily share the fact, this is my 28th state capitol, and that is always fun because then they're comparing.
I'm Scott Franz.
Coming up tomorrow on Colorado Edition, we'll hear from two KUNC reporters who took a recent visit to the ICE facility in Aurora, plus the education stories we'll be watching this school year.
Colorado Edition is made possible with support from our KUNC members. This episode was produced by Lily Tyson and hosted by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Henry Zimmerman. Digital editor Jackie High handles the web, news director Catherine Welch, managing editor Brian Larson, and reporters Matt Bloom and Stephanie Daniels contributed to this episode.
We invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. And starting September 2nd, you can hear the show on KUNC Monday through Thursday at 6:30 p.m.
If you have ideas for something you'd like us to cover, send us an email, coloradoedition@kunc.org. You can also submit a question about the state to Curious Colorado on KUNC's homepage.
Follow us on Twitter at KUNC, and you'll find me at Erin O'Toole1 and Henry at H.W. Zimmerman. And you can now follow KUNC on Instagram, too, at KUNC915.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Colorado Edition.